Our first speaker really doesn't need any introduction. You guys all see who it is, and you all know what he does. He's an associate professor and extension weed management specialist in the Department of Crop and Soil Science at Oregon State University. He's responsible for including statewide weed management support for agronomic crops for farmers, OSU regional extension facilities, and diverse agriculture industry throughout Oregon. Please help me welcome Mr. Andy Hulting.
Thanks, Donnie. Okay, thanks for the introduction, Donnie. And always good to be here at this meeting and take part in this session and help you guys get some recertification credits, but more importantly, tell you what we're up to on the research front at OSU in terms of weed management. So this afternoon, most of you have heard me give several presentations already this fall. We've got a lot of different projects going on. What I thought I'd do for the purpose of this presentation is mostly focus on Seed Council funded research projects, and that relates mostly to grasses grown for seed in Western Oregon. So that's where I'm headed here this morning, and I'll give you what we're saying at OSU in terms of recommendations for weed control and grasses grown for seed. So you've seen this slide before when we're talking about managing the two POA species that we're working with, annual bluegrass and roughstock bluegrass. I'm going to talk about several things that we're doing related to each of these concepts. I'll start with some of the carbon seeding work that we've been doing over the last few years, and then talk more about weed control in the established grasses. But these are really our recommendations that I've been including the last couple years. And so nothing too new there in terms of new recommendations. But I do want to talk about the carbon seeding projects that we've been working on, because we've seen some movement there in the last few months in terms of one new label. I think Steve Salisbury was here yesterday, probably gave you an update on some of the other things that are coming down the pike there. So what we've really been trying to do is work with that group of chemistry there. I've listed the different products, the rimsulfuron, the pyroxysulfone product, one of the pyroxysulfone products, in particular the one that's premixed with flumioxazin, Fierce, the valent product, also Bears and Dazaflam, and also EPTC. And we've generated a pile of data on these different products over the last, I would say, 4 to 5 years. And I think we've demonstrated that each one of these products will work in carbon seeding grasses. And now we just got to work with the industry to get the labels developed. And as you know, some of you might be aware that we did get a new label for the first time in many years on carbon seeding grass for EPTC or EPTAM, and for use in carbon seeded perennial ryegrass this fall, okay? And if you're familiar with that label, there's a couple different ways to use it, either as pre-plant incorporated and then carbon seeding into that EPTAM treated field, or in the more traditional way that we carbon seed, so spraying over the top of a carbon band. So I'm going to talk about these different projects. The way we do that, usually out at Hislop Farm, is where we do a lot of this work, but we've also done work in growers' fields. We know that managing the diuron-resistant POA species is the key requirement there, so we do screen these products on diuron-resistant POA biotypes, and you'll see this in my data slides coming up here. So we can tell if they're going to help us on the resistance situation. So that's just a picture of how we do some of that work. This data is a little bit older now. Like I said, We've been working on this probably since I came to OSU. But this just gives you an idea of the type of control that we've seen with some of these products. Now, the rates there aren't important. What I want you to look at is the percent annual bluegrass control, in this case with Indazaflam or the Allion. Okay, and you can see that as we increase the Indazaflam rate, we see increasing rates of annual bluegrass control, and that's the diuron-resistant biotype. Clearly it is, because you can see our, you know, our standard diuron plus Norton treatment there, the diuron plus effafumisate. We only get about 45% control with that standard treatment. Okay, then you can see for comparison, we have the curb, add curb in there, which is our current labeled recommendation of diuron plus curb, and get good control that way as well. So that's Indazaflam. That's a pre-emergence product labeled in various crops. It's a Bayer crop science product. Some of you might be familiar with using that in your orchard systems. So we have a lot of data on Indazaflam. We also have a lot of data on pyroxasulfone. I mentioned the Fierce product. This is this particular data slide is the standalone pyroxasulfone, so it would be more something like the Zidua product, BASF product. Again, you can see that with increasing rates of pyroxasulfone, we've managed to document that we can control that diuron-resistant POA quite well. Rimsulfuron is probably a little bit closer in terms of getting a label for you guys shortly. I guess my comments on Rimsulfuron would be that I think probably a little bit less efficacy on the POA species, still going to be a good tool for us in some fields, but on some particular biotypes, we haven't quite seen the level of control that we've seen with Indazaflam or the pyroxasulfone. So just to summarize where we're at with the carbon seeding products, I think we can document that we're getting greater than 90% control with Indazaflam and pyroxasulfone. Just like diuron and curb, you know, you still got to do a good job with your seed bed prep, and you still got to be timely with your plantings. We've seen increasing injury with delayed plantings, and crop injury will increase if we, you know, if we get into late November type of plantings, carbon seedings, you're going to get injury with these products, just like you can get injury with diuron. Okay, probably less efficacy with Rimsulfuron, but I think in some fields, in some particular cases, will still be a useful tool. Very good crop safety with Rimsulfuron or the Matrix product. We continue to work with Gallen on their EPTC formulations. In general, I would say, you know, we've had a hard time making Eptam work. I've seen it work both in established grass and in carbon seeding. I think it has a lot to do with environmental conditions and weather and formulations. So, yes, it is currently labeled, but I'd like to see a little bit more consistency out of the Eptam product before we can really recommend it. So we continue to work with Gallen on different formulations. They've got a number of different products that they'd like to see go out in grass, but I want to make sure that we can maximize the efficacy and ease of use for you guys, the growers. Okay, so I think the it can work, but still need to do some work on Eptam. Okay. So that's kind of the carbon story. We've got a number of research projects working with the same suite of chemistry in established grass, and I've listed the different products there, looking for grass weed control and sprout control in established grasses, and that would be perennial ryegrass, tall fescue, orchard grass, and then also doing quite a bit of work in non-carbon seeded or spring planted grasses, things like tall fescue and the fine fescues. The only addition there is BASF is interested in getting their pyroxasulfone foam product labeled for use in grass, so that would be the Zidua product. And so we're comparing that with Fierce and Allion and those sorts of things. So, you know, these are the type of situations that we're trying to see if we can get control of, where we're struggling with annual bluegrass. Annual ryegrass was mentioned already here this morning. We've put a real effort into, and I'll talk more about this here in a moment, but trying to understand the issue with managing these difficult to control biotypes of annual ryegrass in particularly tall fescue this year. So we're putting an emphasis on that project as well. This is just some data in established grass. Again, here's the indazoflam. I apologize, these slides were for a different presentation, so the units are in metrics there, but same sort of idea, increasing rates of indazoflam compared to our standard axiom treatment there at the bottom, the flufenacet plus metribuzin. And so this particular data was in tall fescue. And here's the numbered compound. This is when we first had access to Fierce. It was a numbered compound, really excellent activity on annual bluegrass control in this particular established treatment, and not very much crop injury from that. So I have just a couple photos of what that looks like. So these are established tall fescue plots with a couple different biotypes of annual bluegrass that come up naturally and that we've seeded into the front of the plot. And this is what we want to see. This is what everybody wants to see, right? Okay, so this is that Fierce product. So real good crop safety and excellent annual bluegrass control with Fierce. So some of you might be familiar with using pyroxasulfone in wheat. I think it has a real nice fit for use in grasses grown for seed. So we'll look for that in the next year or so. here's that same tall fescue stand, and we were able to clean that annual ryegrass up pretty good with the Fierce product in this particular field. So with a fall pre-emergence application. So I think going to be a real useful tool in some of our problematic fields. The other issue that comes up with established grass too is, you know, what to do that first fall after a spring seeding. Not too much labeled there except for perhaps maybe prowl. And so we've been working with the industry to try to develop some labels that we could apply that first fall prior to initial seed harvest so that we can get some pre-emergence control going into that first winter. So we've got a number of trials out trying to cover that gap that we have in our grass seed labels. And I would just say that we're working with the same group of products. They all look pretty good. Looking at different rates, people always ask me, you know, what's the timing of those particular products? So we've been focusing on those spring plantings, getting an application on in mid-September to mid-November, sometime in that time frame, and we want to see a half an inch of rainfall within 10 days of application. We've done a number of different timing studies, and that really seems to kind of be the standard where we need to be in terms of getting those pre-emergence herbicides activated. Okay, so you maximize your efficacy there and you minimize your potential for crop injury. So, you know, we're working with Bayer to get Axiom labeled. We're, as the new Fierce label comes along, we're very interested in seeing this timing on that label. BASF has been supportive of getting Zidua labeled for this first fall application, so I think we're making some progress there to give you guys some tools that can be helpful to get start clean, keep fields clean that first year prior to an initial seed harvest. So that being said, you know, we're still going to be reliant on glufosinate, lots of different glufosinate products out there in the marketplace. I've been pushing the fall applications at reduced rates early in the fall to small POA. As you know, if you haven't thought about doing those fall applications, that's kind of where my recommendations have been, so that we don't have to get into this spring rescue type of situation. I've talked with some of you. I hear mixed reports on how your fall rely or glufosinate applications are looking. Some of you are pretty pleased. Some of you are probably going to need to go here again in the spring. So just keep these reminders in place as you think about spring glufosinate applications. So one of the questions we always get as we work on these new pre-emergence herbicides is plant back restrictions, you know, crop rotation sorts of questions. So I've tried to summarize some of that work here in the next few slides. We've been asked to do a number of what we call plant back studies with Allion and Zidua. We've tried to look at a couple different scenarios. One I'll call a failed carbon seeding scenario. So, you know, what happens if you did a carbon planting, for whatever reason, slugs came in, too much water, whatever, you weren't happy with the stand, needed to spray it out, how quickly could you come back and plant a different crop? So we've looked at that scenario, and then we're also looking at a scenario where we've used it in established grass. How quickly could you come back after you take out that established stand and plant a different crop? So I'll talk about the Allion results in a minute. We've done the same thing with Zidua, and there's really nothing to report on the Zidua issue, which is a good thing. So, you know, the current label language is 18 months for most crops, not on the Zidua label. We've done two different studies over multiple years, and you can see the species that I've listed there. We've looked at a number of different grass species, tall fescue, perennial ryegrass, fine fescue, Kentucky bluegrass, and crimson clover establishment the following fall after a Zidua application, and there's no issues. Particularly in Western Oregon on plant back issues with Zidua. How we do that is we treat an area or we treat a stand of grass, and then we come back and at various times and plant the crop species that we're interested in looking at. So it's basically kind of a large field bioassay is how I would term that. A little bit different story with indazaflam, and I would expect that given the potential persistence of this product. Excellent herbicide, but we do know it has a little longer soil activity, which is what you want, right, when you're using it the way it's labeled in various other crops. So we're down in that 1 to 1.5 to 3 ounce rate of indazaflam. You know, you're twice that in an orchard situation. We've come back and planted crops at various times. We think that we'd be safe with something like a wheat crop at those proposed 1 and 1.5 ounce rates. But we have seen some stand loss and stunting at the 3 ounce rate, which is probably somewhere in the neighborhood of a 2x proposed label rate. So we anticipated that, probably not a huge deal, but it's something to keep in mind as Allion comes down the line. So things like application technology and overlap, sprayer overlap, gonna be critical in managing and as a phlegm in grasses grown for seed. I want to come back to the annual ryegrass issue. I've got a master's student from Brazil. His name is Lucas, who's been working on herbicide-resistant annual ryegrass biotypes here in the valley. We proposed a project to the Seed Council to try to get our heads around, you know, how big of an issue is this for growers managing these difficult to control biotypes? What type of resistance do we have out there? So I hired Lucas within the last year. Last summer was his first full field season. And so I just have a couple slides that are Lucas's slides here that show you where we're at with the herbicide-resistant annual ryegrass. Our goal was to do some sampling in various fields up and down the valley here to try to understand the frequency and distribution of these difficult-to-control biotypes of annual ryegrass. We've got one field season in the books already. We managed to sample about 56 different fields in May through July of this year. We mostly focused on grass seed and wheat fields. And we have those populations in the greenhouse now where we're doing some basic screening on herbicide resistance in process. So the way we do that is, you know, your standard bioassay, have a susceptible check, and then plants that you presume are resistant, obviously, are not controlled by various rates of the different herbicides. So the things we've documented so far, we know we have group 15 resistance out there, so that'd be the things like flufenicet plus metribuzin or the Axium. We've got multiple resistance to ALS and ACCase inhibitors in the same field. We have cross resistance to ACCase products. That's not a huge surprise. We've been dealing with that as an industry for a long time. We do have glyphosate resistance in some fields. We've documented some plant or some biotypes that we can no longer control with glyphosate. Some that are even resistant to paraquat. That's a little bit rare, but it does happen. And then we have some fields that really are, we were struggling where we have just truly multiple resistant populations. So glyphosate, clethodim, pinoxidin, peroxalum, you know, so you're cutting across two or three different classes of chemistry there that are very different. And some biotypes are just not controlled. And those of you that have these fields, we know how difficult it is to manage the annual ryegrass, particularly in things like tall fescue when you're up against this. So our goal here is, this is an incomplete map, but our Lucas's goal here is to build a map of where we're at with these different resistant populations in the valley. See what we're up against. You know, the obvious next question is, what do we do about it? I think that's something that particularly those of us in weed science struggle with all the time. You know, we've documented the resistance. We know what's out there. What's the next step? I guess that's for us as an industry to figure out how we're going to manage these biotypes once we know what's out there. So again, we've tested about 21 different populations, 17 we've confirmed some sort of resistance, 6 are multiple resistant populations. Our goal is to sample about 100, Lucas's goal is to sample about 150 fields this coming growing season to add to this database. I'll just say a few things about broadleaf weed control. I know we're going to talk more about that later this afternoon in terms of the dicamba situation that's going on across the country, but it's always been our goal to, you know, decrease our reliance on these older phenoxy formulations, and I think as an industry we've done a really good job of giving you guys some tools. I've listed some of them here. I commonly recommend, you know, Callisto, Husky, Sharpen, AIM, some of the newer formulations of the phenoxies like Latigo 2,4-D plus dicamba. I think you have a lot of good choices to manage broadleaf weeds, so you can stay away from this volatility issue that's plaguing other places in the country. So just take advantage of the products you have out there. A lot of people have worked many hours, many different trials to get these broadleaf labels for you and grasses grown for seed. So we're quite well set up to manage that issue, I would say, as an industry. The only other thing I would say is when we're using these products, timing is the key, and certainly proper adjuvant selection. So when I say timing, I want you guys to be treating spring planted tall fescue when the sharp point is this size and not when it's great big and running out across the rows and you can't even see the fescue plants anymore. Okay, so this is just a photograph or an image of Sharpen. You can see that sharp point pluvillin there is about a dime or a quarter size when we made that Sharpen application. And the Sharpen worked quite well. So, and the grass was probably only two or three leaf, so, or maybe a tiller. So I think it's gonna take some refocusing on our part to learn how to use these products, but I think if we make timely applications to small weeds, we can stay out of the issues of volatility with some of the older formulations of products. So I just, as we move into the spring and you're planting spring grasses, just be thinking about that timing issue with your broadleaf weed control. Okay, I'm gonna stop there. Again, I'd like to acknowledge the Seed Council for continued funding for our research and extension program at OSU, and I value my relationship with Steve Salisbury on the Seed Council, so, and I appreciate all the growers in this room and industry people that have helped us with plot work and recommendations. So I'll leave it there, Donnie. I'll take any questions if you have questions. Stunned silence, right? Yeah. Okay. Right. So did everybody hear his question? So use EPTAM in a snap bean crop, for example, and then come back and plant a perennial ryegrass crop after that. Could you use the EPTAM? My understanding of that is I think that would be fine. It would be on label. You could do that. I don't have concerns about the EPTAM hanging around or carrying over. Not on our soils and not during the middle of summer like that. Plus you have irrigation on that bean crops, for example. So I could envision a scenario where you come in, work the ground, make a EPTAM application, work it in, and then I believe the label says 30 days after that application, carbon seed through that. And I think that could work. And I think your grass would be fine on that situation. Where we've struggled with EPTAM is in the more traditional carbon seeding scenario where we carbon seed and then spray over the top. Sometimes that's to moist soil, sometimes we're treating dry soil, sometimes we get the rain immediately following that application. Where does that EPTAM go? Does it gas off? Does it stay in that germination zone and cause a lot of injury? That's where we're struggling with EPTAM. So, but if you want to use it pre-plant incorporated, I think that would be a good strategy to get started with it. Yeah. So his comment was, how do we, with all the rain, we just had multiple flushes of weeds coming all winter and spring. So in particularly in established grass, I've been sort of recommending people, I know this week's a good spray week, so get your stuff done this week and then kind of hang it up for a month and then see where we're at in February. We've done a lot of applications of Outlook and Dual, not so much Axiom or things like that with February applications, and I've been relatively pleased with getting some control in February. I've also seen some things where we delayed into March, and that was too late because we had too much crop injury. Okay, so I think you're okay this week and maybe another week or so, but then I've been telling people, let's see where we're at, you know, in that first week of February and see if we need to do something else. Last year we just had so much rain, I think we just, none of our pre-emergence materials were left. I mean, they just flushed through the system and broke down, and we just didn't get the control that we needed. Okay, thanks for your time.